Hey, hey, this is Thurston. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby. Yeah, keep listening.
It's a tale as old as time. Someone comes in with a grand proclamation. They're going to save the news industry. That person, usually wealthy, usually not a journalist, says they're going to transform journalism. They're going to make it sustainable and invest in real news. And at first, it seems to work. But after a few months or years, the promise falls flat. First comes layoffs, then downsizing. Finally, admissions that the model isn't working the way they thought it would. Okay, maybe it's only a tale as old as the past decade or so, but there's been a pattern of these kinds of overhauls in journalism, where big promises are made by people who seem to have the secret sauce that will solve all of the industry's problems. And then the growth that was promised doesn't happen. And that's what some say has happened over the last couple of weeks at Overstory Media Group. See, in 2021, Farhan Mohammed, the former editor-in-chief of Daily Hive, teamed up with tech entrepreneur Andrew Wilkinson and launched Overstory Media Group, or OMG. They said they'd revitalize Canadian news by expanding to over 250 journalists at 50 outlets by 2023. They said they already had a handful of small outlets that were succeeding, and that brings us to now. The network has expanded to 12 outlets, including several new publications and the acquisition of two existing brands. But that 50 goal was not even close to being reached. And on January 30th, they terminated four-star journalists at Victoria's Capital Daily, halving their editorial team and telling staff that their financial losses had led them to reconsider their focus on hard news. They said they needed to focus more on community, on things that made their city seem like a great place. There was a lot of pushback from readers, concerned their beloved local news source would turn into something akin to an early BuzzFeed. And staff seemed to be revolting too. A union was announced the next day, and leaked tape from several staff meetings began floating around to reporters. There were accusations that OMG executives tried to interfere in the editorial process. And the two founders responded to their critics. In nearly 100 revealing tweets, they admitted they were losing money, saying that people didn't want to pay for journalism. Tech millionaire Wilkinson tweeted in a long thread that, quote, if you give someone a chance to do something that is a big swing slash has a low probability of success, then you need to be 100% ready to have them hate your guts with a passion. Farhan Mohammed tweeted that, quote, most journalists don't understand business. But worse, they don't care to. I'm Cherise Sutran, sitting in for Jesse Brown. This week, Jonathan Goolsbee and I give you an inside look at the fallout at Overstory Media and what it means for the future of journalism, for enterprising tech millionaires, and for the state of democracy overall. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, Cherise.
So let's address the obvious. Why is Jesse not in the host chair today?
Well, ever since Twitter went down, he's been inconsolable. Just sits with his laptop in the whisper room, hitting refresh, refresh, refresh. Jesse's doing just fine. And Twitter, as of this recording, is still working just well enough. Jesse's not here because he has a conflict with one of the subjects of today's show and has therefore recused himself.
I thought Jesse loves conflict.
Yes, but not, thankfully, conflicts of interest. One of the people we're talking about today, as you've alluded to in the intro, is Andrew Wilkinson, a BC multimillionaire, not quite yet a billionaire, whose foundation is an investor in Canada Land. In spring 2020, Canada Land struck a deal with Wilkinson's Tiny Foundation. That's what it's called, the Tiny Foundation. That would see the organization pump a total of $1 million into Canada Land in monthly installments spread out over 3 years. But while Tiny is a nonprofit, it's not a charity, and so this isn't a contribution exactly, but rather a convertible loan. So at the end of the 3-year period, the Tiny Foundation will get a stake in this company, somewhere between like 10 and 16% or so of the total ownership, depending on how much of that loan has been paid back.
So they'll become part owner of Canada Land?
I mean, yes, they will. And to be clear, that's the tiny foundation, not tiny capital, which is Wilkinson's multi-million dollar for-profit holding company. But I should also note that all the voting shares in Canada Land will continue to be held by Jesse Brown, who's the founder and publisher. And the agreement with Tiny has a specific clause, which Jesse highlighted when first announcing the investment to our supporters 3 years ago. The clause reads, "The Tiny Foundation shall not have any involvement, influence, or control in the editorial decisions or process of Canada Land Media."
So why do they want a piece of it?
Well, also from the June 2020 email that Jesse wrote, "Any money they get back from us, the Tiny Foundation will reinvest into Canadian journalism," end quote, by basically repeating the process with other news startups.
I guess we use that tiny money for what it's there for, reporting on Canadian media, which just so happens to be linked to Tiny.
Yeah, let's see how much we can Ouroboros it.
So let's start from the beginning. When Overstory Media was founded, there were promises of building a news company that would hire 250 journalists over the next 2 years. They would revitalize local media. The jewel of that crown was the Capital Daily. In 2019, Andrew Wilkinson had started Capital Daily in his hometown of Victoria, and he hired a journalist to deliver local news to readers' inboxes. It showed surprising growth. In just a year, they had over 40,000 subscribers and growing ad revenue. This is kind of an astounding number in the local news world, but they seem to have really cracked the code on what that community wanted. They claimed that they would be making a ton of money off of expanding and creating similar outlets in other local communities. A story in The Logic from 2022 reported on a leaked pitch deck that OMG was using to get investors. The story said the pitch deck promised OMG would be the Chipotle for news, referring to their high profitability in a short time span, and that there was, quote, a billion-dollar monopoly opportunity lurking in local news.
They kind of held themselves out as the saviors of local journalism in Canada and were held up by others as a potential model to be replicated elsewhere outside of Canada.
Overstory Media Group. Their model is to build subscribers through a newsletter news publishing mechanism, and they're in a massive growth mode. So large that they are now looking to hire over 250 journalists, employ them as they launch 50 new platforms throughout North America. What's their business model? How are they growing? Well, we're going to find out by the CEO and co-founder, Farhan Mohammed.
They got all kinds of good news headlines around the world, characterized by The Guardian's 50 news outlets, 250 journalists. Canadian startup unveils plans to revive local news, which was published under The Guardian's Upside banner for stories that look at possible solutions to the world's ills. And that number, 250 journalists, is what really caught broad attention. I mean, I guess I would say I was a bit more skeptical, but like it didn't seem totally implausible. And I think it was that degree of plausibility that made it such an enticing story. It seemed plausible because like this idea of one rich guy who happens to like really like journalism enthusiastically throwing money towards a bunch of journalists. It didn't seem like out of the question because, I mean, like, isn't that kind of everyone's dream that one day some rich person will see the value in what they do and then put a crap ton of money towards helping them do it?
That is kind of the dream. And in Victoria, the Capital Daily was doing exactly what OMG's founders claimed, which was essentially cementing themselves as a vital source of news in the local community. Here's Cassidy Villabon-Barakas, our own associate producer who happens to live in Victoria and was a subscriber to Capital Daily.
I think the Capital Daily was important for the community because they provided kind of a granular level of local coverage to important issues that we face here in Victoria, from housing to healthcare to the environment to municipal news. I just thought it was really important as an alternative because the other news sources that are local from TV, talk radio, and the Times Colonist, which is our kind of newspaper of record here in Victoria, they kind of all kind of speak more to an older population. They had a podcast that ran for a period of time that was really cool and interesting and explored different issues that I really loved.
And then here's Kate Elizabeth Corte, also a reader and a former freelancer for Capital Daily.
The options were pretty limited to like working in radio or in communication somehow or working for Black Press. It seemed like there was a possibility that young journalists could actually have a chance of staying in the community where they went to university and contributing with their skills and with the relationships they had built to an actual career in journalism.
So when four staff were terminated on January 30th, it came as a shock. Specifically, it was because of exactly who had been fired. Managing editor Jimmy Thompson, as well as Bridget Basso, Shannon Waters, Jolene Rudisuela, who made up some of the main editorial staff.
I will say that I was completely shocked by the firings.
I was surprised because I feel that Jimmy and also Bridget and Shannon were extremely well received by the community and had really grown relations in Victoria and built a lot of trust here.
I think of the people that are gone, and they were as smart as they come, as capable as they come.
I was really frustrated because it felt like they just completely gutted their team and gutted their ability to report out these stories that I thought were incredibly valuable to the community. So I had some choice words for them. I just didn't want to subscribe to the Capital Daily anymore.
CanadaLand has obtained tape from the meeting with the remaining staff held right after the firings that day.
We've heard from the rest of your team this morning, but if you haven't, Jimmy, Bridget, Jolene, and Shannon are no longer part of the Capital Daily team as of this morning.
Farhan Mohammed, OMG's co-founder and CEO, said they were losing money because people weren't paying for news.
Da, da, da.
We went really hard on Newsletter and like trying to figure that out. And then on in-depth investigations, and the assumption was we were going to see this influx of people paying for it. And that didn't happen as much. We thought that the market would adapt, we would continue growing our subscribers, but it's clear that people don't want to pay for the journalism.
He said things just weren't working, especially at Capital Daily, which they'd previously held up as the proof of concept for the whole enterprise.
From a purely revenue side, it scares the shit out of me. And I said a couple of weeks ago, like, we need to double our revenue, this is what we need to do over the next 6 months. When I look at Cap Daily, we cannot and should not be in a position where we're going to lose a third of our revenue. That scares me to death when Cap Daily is our flagship. Cap Daily should be the thing that has this giant moat around it and no one can come and touch us. That's where it should be.
Mohammed spoke of a move from focusing on journalism to what he called community engagement.
And this is where I say, like, the things that we've been trying, this is where, like, community engagement come into play. And I heard this when I was in Victoria, and I asked someone, you know, community leader, and I said, what do you think of Cap Daily? And they said, you know, I know that Victoria is an awesome place, but when I read Capital Daily, it seems like Victoria is the shittiest place on earth. There's so many good people that are doing good things. There are so many businesses. There are so many, like, you name it, that are here and existing. But why is the newsletter not being that voice?
There was some pushback from the staff.
It's incredibly confusing to have the people who put out the daily news and the weekly news gone. Do you know for sure, like, what people are subscribing to? And my impression is that it's for the news. It's for the original reporting.
Yeah. I think it's the... I think we have been trying. We've been trying things over the past 3-6 plus months, and we've been losing subscribers for a long time. You know, one answer is, do we invest more in journalism? And we did that. We tried that, and that also hasn't worked.
There was another meeting a week later, February 6th, which was also leaked to us. Farhan wanted to take more questions from the staff. There was an assumption that these four journalists had been laid off, which would theoretically mean that business had dried up and that they could be brought back when or if it returned. This was not the case, nor was it the case that it was directly about money.
So I do think we could have done a better job communicating. I will clarify, it wasn't a layoff. We terminated people without cause. It wasn't directly cost related. So I will just say that, and that's what we've communicated to everybody, and that's still the case.
The fired reporters were told they did not have the skill set to continue along with the company's planned changes. And for a lot of staff, it was even more shocking because months before that, in December 2022, Farhan had laid off three journalists in the OMG network, and staff were told that that would be all for the foreseeable future. In an email sent that day in December, Farhan said to staff that they had made assumptions about how, quote, building strong and connected communities will garner attention and desire from local advertisers. He admitted that assumption had not yet worked for some publications. Yet, at a staff meeting also held that day, Mohammed seemed confident that they were bringing in enough revenue.
Over the past month, maybe, month and a half, maybe, we've said goodbye to a number of people, some on their own, some for everything else for business reasons. But my goal is, like, this is it. I think we've got a really solid team here, and I don't foresee us having to do anything else.
So you've heard a lot from Farhan and what he's told the staff about what has happened in the company. But Canada Land has talked to 10 current and former staff members of OMG across Canada, both on and off the record. We've heard that working at OMG was for many a frustrating experience in which there were constant changes, layoffs, and pivots. Multiple on-background sources allege that Farhan attempted to interfere with the editorial independence of the newsletter. In one alleged incident, he asked newsletter staff to place a story about Tiny Capital's upcoming merger with WeCommerce at the top of the newsletter. In another, it's alleged that he asked staff to write a thank you to advertisers in the newsletter intro. According to my sources, these moves received pushback from the staff. Managing editor Jimmy Thompson, who was allegedly one of the staff who pushed back the most, was fired a week later. I put these allegations to Farhan Mohammed. He did not respond by press time. And we've heard former staff say that some of the projects they started were not given enough time to succeed, that a new venture would be started, and then suddenly canceled when the growth they expected didn't happen. One of these was The Good Newsletter, a weekly newsletter launched in early 2021 focusing on good things and community events happening in Victoria. According to several sources, the project had a very high engagement rate with subscribers and a high open rate of over 60%.
Wait, seriously? Open rate over 60%?
It was actually 70. I was told 70, but I'm saying 60 to be safe.
How is that? I mean, if that's accurate, that is extraordinary.
Yeah, anyway, so it's pretty rare in newsletters for that kind of a rate. But then management decided that they needed to get paid supporters to keep that newsletter going. So they set a goal of signing up 500. The newsletter didn't meet the goal, and in December 2022, it was shut down. But several sources claimed that management didn't give the campaign a long enough chance to succeed. So I wanted to check this for myself. I found the Good Newsletter archives. The first mention of a paid membership campaign was in the last week of November 2022. It was mentioned again the next week, then a couple weeks later. And then a week after that, the newsletter announced that would be its final edition. I'm not an expert, but that seems maybe not quite long enough, especially during the holidays.
I mean, it sounds like they gave it overall time to succeed, I guess, 2 years. But then seemingly it's a last-ditch effort. Like, shit, we got to get people to pay for this. And something that I guess had been free for quite some time, or people used to be receiving for free, it's quite an abrupt change. So it's hard to say whether it was like a realistic expectation. Were they set up to fail? I don't know. Probably not. I'm sure they would much rather this have succeeded. But yeah, once again, that's an ambitious target.
Yeah. Then there was the podcast, Decomplicated.
Hi, I'm Carol Eugene Park, and I'm Ramnik Johal. This is Decomplicated.
Two young journalists, fresh out of J school, were hired by OMG to start a podcast that would explain what was happening in the news. They launched in March 2021. Just 3 months later, the podcast was shuttered and the journalists let go. Farhan emailed staff saying that the podcast was started based on assumptions about what younger people wanted in news, but that he eventually thought about how, quote, the setup is as important as the idea itself. While all this was happening, there were talks of a union. According to several sources, OMG staff began talking about forming a union starting around the spring of 2022. And then last week, one day after the four journalists at Capital Daily were let go, workers signed union cards to join CWA Canada, forming the Overstory Media Guild. Here's Martin Bowman, a current reporter with The Coast in Halifax, and an organizer with the OMG union.
I was seeing, and I think we were seeing, at times Overstory straying from its initial promise of what it attracted us in being, a place where, you know, journalists could come and do their best work and be, you know, well paid for it and fairly paid for it, a place where, you know, editorial decisions were left to editorial folks. That felt to me like the promise. And this you know, union is in part at least about having Overstory uphold that initial promise of being a place where people can do great work and are trusted to do the work that they know best without too much interference or straying from that vision.
And I should jump in here just to note that Candlelight employees are also members of CWA Canada, which stands for Communications Workers of America Canada.
In the recent Twitter sprees, Mohammed and Wilkinson have denied the firings were because of an upcoming union vote. Wilkinson actually said he had been aware of the union drive in 2022.
Whereas Mohammed, when asked on Twitter by @theshoelady33 whether he was aware they were organizing, answered no.
Now, I've heard several different takes on this from current and former staff. Some say they believe management isn't telling the truth. Others say the union probably had nothing to do with the firings. Here's Zoe Ducklow, a reporter for the West Shore and Capital Daily.
It's possible. I know that OMG knew that we were organizing, but I don't know if they knew anything about the timeline. I really can't say if they're connected.
But in that pitch deck that The Logic got a hold of in mid-2022, OMG did say that one of the reasons that they could be able to scale up and in theory have profit margins mimicking those of old school newspapers at a fraction of the cost was, and this is The Logic's paraphrase, thanks in part to its operations costing less than those of legacy publishers, including an all-digital approach, no physical newsrooms, and no unions.
So it was a selling point for them.
Seemingly.
Now, we've heard a lot more from former employees about what it was like to work with Andrew and Farhan. But unfortunately, you won't hear from them. That's because OMG employees, upon being let go, are usually given an offer, get the legally mandated amount of severance, or sign a non-disparagement agreement saying you won't speak badly about the company and get a lot more in severance pay. Even further, the agreement prevents signatories from mentioning the existence of the agreement, so they can't even say if a non-disparagement agreement exists. Jonathan, in your experience, are these kinds of agreements normal in media?
I mean, even if I'd signed one at one point, I wouldn't be able to tell you, right? But I haven't, nor have I ever personally been presented with one. I'd say it's like fairly common generally when employees are dismissed from certain kinds of professional environments for an employer to present them with certain terms in exchange for a larger payout than the law or their contract might entitle them to. And a non-disparagement clause is usually a pretty standard part of that package of terms. But if you don't see it as much in media in Canada, it's probably mostly because most of the largest outlets are unionized and collective agreements already provide for things better than the legal minimum. And it's just like there's nothing to sign when you're let go. You're already getting that in most cases.
OMG's founders have said a lot about the financial status of the company, but a lot of these things have been pretty confusing. Mohammed has said several times over the past couple of years that Capital Daily was profitable. Like, for example, on this panel with the Canadian Journalism Foundation in September 2022.
And so we've seen that, you know, our flagship Capital Daily, it's a profitable publication. We have, I think, almost 10 people working on that thing now.
The Logic reported that the OMG pitch deck claimed Capital Daily was profitable from 2021 to 2022. However, on February 3rd of this year, Andrew said on Twitter that Capital Daily had not ever been profitable, but it did break even for a time. He also said that the business, OMG overall, had lost $5 million, most of which was his personal money, and that it continued to lose. Another seemingly inconsistent thing is the question of ownership of OMG. In July 2022, The Logic reported that Tiny Capital, Andrew Wilkinson's multi-million dollar holding company, was OMG's majority shareholder, and OMG was listed as majority owned on the Tiny website. That's at least until last December, when it appears to have been taken down. And in a tweet the other week, Andrew said that Overstory is not part of Tiny. I'm not sure what's going on here, whether Tiny still owns Overstory or if the ownership has changed. I've asked him and he hasn't responded. But it is interesting in the context of Tiny going public, which is set to happen very soon.
But it's like, it's interesting. It's not an IPO, but it's rather merging with one of the companies it owns that is already listed on the TSX Venture Exchange. And by merging with this company, WeCommerce, it gets to itself be listed. And the new company will also be called Tiny. So it's like absorbing it, I don't know, with some sort of blob-like. Maybe it's not a blob, but I don't know, some sort of amoeba-like osmosis. The merger plans were announced on January 23rd, and within a day, the value of Wilkinson's shares in WeCommerce, just the WeCommerce part alone, went up by something like $20 million.
Wow.
And that's a fraction of it. So based on the prices in their news release of what they sort of estimate the value of this thing to be, Wilkinson's shares in this overall combined company, when this goes through in April, would be around, I think, about $650 to $700 million. And the value, you know, once it's on the stock market, the value could probably go up beyond that. And, you know, that might push him beyond the billion mark.
Right. And several news stories are actually already referring to him as a billionaire. And I think it's a descriptor that Wilkinson is kind of particular about. So in reporting this story, I sent him a text asking if we could talk. He replied that I should instead send questions to Farhan. And then he added this. He said, "One note on my end, I'm not a billionaire."
One thing to know about Andrew Wilkinson is that he literally idolizes Warren Buffett. And by literally idolizes Warren Buffett, I mean that he figuratively idolizes Warren Buffett, and also that he quite literally manufactures and sells bronze busts of Warren Buffett. They go for $1,299 US each at berkshirenerds.store. Berkshire Hathaway being the name of Warren Buffett's main company. It says, "Handcrafted in the USA, these busts are the perfect centerpiece for your office or gift to a fellow Berkshire groupie." And the first question in the FAQ is, "Will my bust give me investment advice?" The answer, "No, but if you press your hand to it and channel Warren and Charlie, the answer you are looking for may come to you." Charlie is Charlie Munger, the vice chairman of Berkshire Hathaway, and they also sell a bust of him. Goodness knows there are worse billionaires to look up to than Warren Buffett. I mean, he, you know, famously advocates for higher taxes on the super rich, like himself, which is, you know, certainly rare among billionaires. And kind of like that, Andrew very much wants to be seen as a good rich person and to show that it is possible to be a good rich person, to acquire a lot of wealth and do good things with it and not be evil. I mean, presumably not subscribing to the idea that every billionaire is a policy failure, but that billionaires can be, in fact, be virtuous. And he appears on a lots of podcasts about billionaires, always talking to people about money stuff.
Reboot, I had spent a year going through the world of high finance, meeting all these billionaires, super successful people, and realizing what made me sad was that these are the people that have reached the very top. And they're all still striving. They're all still looking up. They're all still comparing. I remember I once spoke to a person that's worth $2 billion, and he made an offhand comment talking about some other billionaire who's worth $20 billion. He goes, "Oh my God, he's so rich." And I said, "Hold on a second. You're worth $2 billion. What can he do that you can't do?" And the guy just kind of goes a bit glassy-eyed and quiet, and he goes, "He can buy a super yacht." And I was just like, this is insane, right? Like, where does this end, right? And I think
he's someone who, like, his story is, you know, a guy from Victoria. He ran a website called Mac Teens back when he was a teen.
What is Mac Teens?
Mac Teens, he wasn't the founder, but it was a Web 1.0 fan community for teenagers who were into Apple computers. Then he went to Ryerson for journalism, dropped out shortly after he started, later saying that it was partly because, like, the professors were talking to him in general how poor prospects in media would be and how they're going to make $35,000 forever and it's going to be shit and whatever. And this was back in, like, 2004, 2005 when there was a little bit of hope left in the world. But basically, he moved back home, started doing some, like, web design type things, created a agency and consultancy, and sort of snowballed and grew and grew, and then eventually to the point where he was starting things and acquiring things and investing and owning pieces and just trading around and growing and growing and growing his wealth and his portfolio. And while he is not a billionaire, the value of all of the companies he's invested in put together almost certainly does exceed $1 billion.
I think a lot of this is really interesting in the context of OMG needing to secure growth and the difference between a normal business's growth and a media company's growth. As I mentioned before, a week after the initial all-staff in which Farhan fielded questions, and a few days after he went on a Twitter spree saying journalists didn't want to understand business, he held another all-staff meeting, and here's what he said.
I was speaking directly about, and so this is, yeah, Twitter's a... I mean, at a certain point last week, I just shut down Twitter, took it off my phone. Should have done that from the very beginning. A lot of that crap that came out last week about
journalists not at this company and who were putting out all these stories on us, like, there was so much of a lack of understanding, and it was so crystal clear that a lot